Act 2, Cain's Dilemma and Ur Decision.
The days were dark and the nights were long and cold. Arguments broke out in all of Europe, Germany, France, Russia, and England. Seeds of hate were sown. Greed, envy, and jealousy was the spirit of the age. Neighbor against neighbor, country against country, brother against brother. Jobs were scarce, people were hungry. And in the midst of this, the young Paul Tillich finished his degree in theology and took a small church in Germany in the province of Brandenburg. Then came World War I, and from 1914 to 1918, Paul Tillich served his country as a military chaplain. Often, he held a soldier in his hands and recited to them the Lord's Prayer or Psalm 23. Paul watched machine guns destroy human flesh for the first time. Poisonous gas suffocated soldiers, closed up their lungs. Paul Tillich sutured gashes from barbed wire, and he comforted soldiers with uncontrollable shakes and screams. When the war was finally over, Paul returned home and found his wife pregnant with another man's child. Divorce followed. Things started to look up a bit. Paul began teaching theology at the University of Berlin and then at the University of Marburg. Many people admired his ideas. But then Hitler came to power, and Paul Tillich found a pink slip in his box. He was dismissed from his position in theology. His American friends welcomed him over. His books were publicly burned by Nazi soldiers, brother against brother. And in a small book of published sermons when he came to America, with this profound depth of human experience behind him, he wrote these words, words that shimmer for us today. He wrote, "There is something in the misfortune of our friends that does not displease us." Sadly, these words ring true to us often. There is something in the misfortune of our friends that does not displease us. Last week, in Act 1 of God's script, we heard the story of God's creative love. We marveled with each other at our magnificent Maker who gifts us with a world to enjoy, a world where God's love breaks through chaos and brings order and wholeness and full life to every one of us. In Act 2 of our story, it moves from the awe-filled days of creation to the awe-filled realities that human beings do to one another. Act 2 is tough, let me warn you. Act 2, we remember Adam and Eve's folly in the garden, Cain's murder of Abel, the wickedness of Noah's friend, and the pitfalls of pride, the Tower of Babel. In Act 2, we look inside ourselves. We look to learn from Cain, and we look to God to change us. So here's Cain's story. A long time ago, in the very beginning, God created Adam and Eve. Their relationship was tested. A sly serpent and a piece of fruit couldn't stop the plan that God set into motion. They decided it was time for kids. Eve, the mother of all the living, gave birth to Cain. Cain was the firstborn, the heir of his father's household. And then, of course, came Abel. The two brothers grew up together under the parenting of Adam and Eve, under the love of the Creator God. They were all happy. They were all together until one day. Cain preferred gardening with his fresh tomatoes and lettuce, made wonderful salads for the family. Abel always loved animals, so he took care of the sheep. The wool was used for clothes, and the sheep's milk and meat gave protein to the family's diet. Both boys became men. Both prospered. One day they thanked God by giving back from their labors. Cain gave fruit. Abel gave the fat portions of the sheep. Then comes the problem. God preferred or liked Abel's gift better than Cain's. So there we have it. God prefers meat to veggies. Biblical proof that God is a carnivore, not a vegetarian. No, there's something deeper going on in this passage. The truth is that the Bible doesn't tell us why God prefers Abel's sacrifice. We don't know. Many throughout the last 1,000 years have tried to give a rationale for why this is, but the truth is, we don't know. But the passage leaves us empty, so we must use our imaginations to fill in those blanks and to think about it. The passage shares with us that Cain got very angry and his countenance fell. Cain was upset because of God's preference, of God's blessing to his brother. After all, Cain was the oldest. Cain was the firstborn. Cain deserved God's favor. Cain was a privileged man in the ancient world. So, he did what all privileged men do when they don't get what they want. He sulked. Then God speaks to Cain. God reaches out to Cain in love. And in verse 6 says this, "Why are you angry? And why has your countenance fallen?" How many of us get upset when we're passed up for a job promotion? How many of us walk around pouting that we didn't get our way? We become curmudgeon-like, complaining about the life we didn't get. It doesn't matter your age. Infants and senior citizens can get caught in this life trap. A few years ago, Stacy threw a party to celebrate that I graduated from seminary. It was a great party. My friends and my family were there, and we celebrated. Towards the end of the day, a friend of the family came up to me with teary eyes, and she said this. She said, "Dale, God favors you." She said, "Dale, trust me." And then she proceeded to tell me how stuck her daughter was and how her own job was a dead end. She was disappointed with the life she had. Now, I don't know about you, but the thought of God favoring one person over the other troubles me. So with all this money spent on a seminary education, I decided to put my brain to work, and I thought about this problem. And then it hit me. God favors all. God blesses all. We don't always see it. We don't understand how it works. But God, the God of the Bible, blesses the whole world. But here's the hard part. God gives different assignments to different people. Sometimes God gives the assignment that we would want to someone else. God's timetable for blessing is not ours. That's the difficult part. We are not the creators of life. So Abel gets God's approval, but not Cain. But it's not the end of the world for Cain, right? This simply wasn't his day. He needs bigger perspective that the sun will rise tomorrow, blessing will come again. But that's a lot like life for every one of us, right? Some days we're passed up, and some days we feel blessed. Some days we get the promotions we deserve, but other days we don't. We lose our business when our friends thrive. We're stuck at home raising kids when our spouse advances in their career. We lose our retirement money when the economy melts down. We are laid off and someone else gets a promotion. We're put in the hospital when someone else is healthy. And we think that God is favoring someone else, but not us, not me. Now I need to pause here and say something really, really important. These circumstances are real. They're in our community, and they're tough, they're painful, they're confusing, but there's hope today, because this is not the end of our story. This is not the end of your story. God gives hope to us in no matter where life's journey takes us. So God speaks again, and God's words to Cain are words to us. If you do well, will you not be accepted? Or if you do right, will you not be favored and blessed? God gives Cain a conditional promise. If he does right, he'll be accepted. He'll be favored again. But the Bible doesn't tell us how long it's going to take before Cain gets blessed, or how long we're going to get blessed. It doesn't tell us when. How many of us would love to pull our planners out right before God and say, okay, pick the date, and we're cool. This is good. We'll make this arrangement with God. But it doesn't work that way, unfortunately. Then God adds this eye-popping statement at the end of verse 7. And if you do not do well, sin is lurking at the door. Its desire is for you, but you must master it. This verse is God's road sign warning to us. God says, warning, beware. It's a jungle out there. When we let our bitterness, our envy, our pride, and our jealousy, and our anger overtake us, we're in trouble. The Bible points to the reality that there is real evil in this world. There's a force that can take hold of us and spin us into chaos. But God's promise remains. God's power is an ever-present help to us in our time of trouble. So Cain is left with a choice. He has a dilemma and a decision to make. Of course, Cain's choice becomes Abel's nightmare. And I wish I could tell you that the story has a better ending, but it doesn't. Cain takes all his pent-up anger and directs it towards Abel, brother against brother. Notice Cain doesn't talk back to God. God has called out to him twice now, and Cain not once has responded. So Cain takes his brother out back and kills him. And God speaks to Cain again. Where's your brother? And this time Cain responds sarcastically. Am I my brother's keeper? Then God shares with Cain the consequences of his action. Finally, after all that, Cain grasps his folly. He pleads with God to lessen the sentence. And then God does a remarkable thing from my point of view. God does lessen it. God promises that he will not be murdered. God puts a mark on his head to seal this promise. Now Cain had killed God's creation. And God still, even though the consequences are still all there, still blessed Cain. That's remarkable. How many of us, like Cain, when we go through these hard times, we desperately need to cry out with the psalmist, why, God? Why have you forsaken us? But instead of that, we just roll with the momentum. We let ourselves be mastered by the spirit of the air and hurt our beloved friends and family and those close to us. Paul Tillich said, there is something in the misfortune of our friends that does not displease us. Tillich's words have teeth, and they speak truthfully to our human condition, our dilemma. If I'm honest, if we are honest this morning, there exists within us an annoying sickness, a nagging insecurity. We're quick to judge and slow to love. We get jealous, envious, rude, and even hostile to our neighbors, especially those we love the most. When we don't get what we want, we pout. We say mean things behind each other's backs. We hold deep resentments and don't forgive easily. Now, most of us don't go to the extreme like Cain and head to murder, but we do other things, mean, short things, passive-aggressive things to each other. But when any of these attitudes fester within us, we're in the danger zone. God offers a major warning sign with this short story. We all die a slow death when we don't deal with that garbage that builds up. We miss out on purpose and beauty and love life at its fullest, life the way the Creator made it to be. But what if? What if today we took this step and we thought of the Bible as a script? Actors and actresses study a script, not just to blandly memorize, but to embody and to make real for an audience, to make it real for the world. And just like the script, the Bible welcomes us into a dynamic relationship with God, the main character, whose transforming love alters the way we see our world, alters the way we view ourselves, we view our friends and family, and gives us the tools to make a world where everyone can shine. It's tough to face our own personal garbage, to forgive, to check our attitudes, to learn the art of love, to master the art of love. Garbage stinks, and garbage has no place in our lives. So I remind you today that this passage tells us really simply, it's time to take out the garbage. We have a choice. We can do what Paul Tillich says and bemoan the blessings of our friends, or we can cultivate happiness for a friend's promotion, compassion when someone goes through tough times, forgiveness for those who have hurt us. I'm not saying it's easy. In fact, I find it very difficult. But the choice is ours. Abundant life that God promised is ours. But we need to choose. Will we choose God's script, or will we become angry, unscripted wanderers in the world? Amen.